Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts, typically with a focus on Kenpo. I am Reggie Darden, and we have another wonderful guest today. I got Mr. Jeff Grant, and he's going to share his journey in martial arts with us, and whatever other things that we happen to talk about, and that's what we'll do. So I usually start things off with a little bit of my background. I am way too busy doing too many martial arts, but you know, I can't stop. So I've been doing Kenpo and Hapkido and boxing and Muay Thai and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Capoeira. So I stay busy, but I love it, and doing this show just feeds that hunger even more. So that's just kind of my little spiel. So we'll get into Mr. Grant. How did the martial arts find you, and where and when did it all start for you, and we'll kind of go from there.
First, I just want to say thanks for having me out. Thanks for reaching out. I'm sort of blessed to be on this. I've listened to your other podcasts. So like I mentioned earlier, I hope I can live up to previous guests that you've had on. But so my journey. Wow, man. So I guess I'll start off by my dad was in the military. He was a lifer, retired. He spent 20 years in and retired. And I grew up in Germany. So the first 12 years of my life, I spent in Germany. And over there, there's one thing you do when you grow up, and that's play soccer, right? So, but at the time, it was kind of when I was turning like 9, 10, 11 years old, all the Bruce Lee movies started hitting. And man, we had one movie theater on base, and every Bruce Lee flick that came out, my dad took me. Right. And I didn't realize at the time he was probably a big martial arts nerd. Right. So, and then I find out later that when he was stationed in Korea, he actually took Taekwondo in Korea and got his green belt. And I kind of discovered it by accident one day. You know, you're rifling through your parents' stuff. And I was like, whoa, what's this? Right. Anyways.
Okay, for the listeners here, we had a little technical difficulties, so but we got that worked out, so we're back on track. So if the conversation seems a little off here in this first part, that's what happened, but we're going to pick back up where we were. And you were mentioning that you were in Germany, and you were doing soccer, getting into soccer.
Yeah, I mean, that's what everybody grows up playing there. So I think I mentioned, you know, my dad was stationed there. When he retired, we came back to the States, and we ended up here in Dallas, specifically at first Mesquite, and then we moved over to Richardson. But, you know, kind of Bruce Lee movies got me into it, and I got here, and I started watching, you know, Chuck Norris, and I was like, oh man, this is a lot cooler than soccer, right? And
so, exactly.
So I think I bugged my parents to death, and they eventually took me to a karate place, and I didn't know it at the time, but I signed up to go to Texas Karate Institute, which they had it in Richardson. It was over off of Nantucket, this little side street in Richardson, and it was run by Walt Mason. And you know, at the time, I didn't realize kind of how lucky I was, because that was kind of the Texas blood and guts eras. And you had all these fighters coming out of there, Skipper Mullins and Alan Steen and Pat Burleson and all these other guys. And, you know, so I joined this place, and I'm like, man, this is cool. But it made me nervous, too, because, you know, I'm 13, 14 years old, and I'm in there with a bunch of guys who are youngest guys, probably mid 30s, and they're going up to 50. And, you know, I'm the only kid when I was going. And man, TKI at the time they were about sparring. So it's like, we fought every time I went to class. And, you know, I'm a little nervous. These guys twice as big as me. And, and definitely a lot stronger. But it was fun. We would go in and man, they'd condition us to death with just drills and stances and how to punch and how to fight. And I can't remember who the instructor was, but his thing was body conditioning, right? You got to be ready to take it and give it. And I remember I'm a 14-year-old kid and they used to give me the kicking shield. And he's like, now you hold it against your body, right? And I'm going to kick it as hard as I can with a side kick. And you're going to learn how to take it and you're going to learn how to key out so I don't knock the air out of you. So I just remember every time we go to class, I was like, please, man, don't bring out the kicking shield. And next thing you know, 10 minutes later here, it magically appears and I'm holding it, just getting the crap kicked out of me. But yeah, we would spar a lot. And right. And that was the thing. You go to your tournaments, you'd spar, you know, and you'd learn. And I never realized how I was doing because I was going against these bigger guys and I'm thinking, man, I'm just getting beat up every time. But, you know, there was that one time that it paid off. And I haven't been in a lot of fights in my life, very few, in fact. And I just remember this kid threw one punch and all it took was a sidestep and a roundhouse to the sternum and it was done. And afterwards, I just kind of walked away and I was like, holy crap, man. Instead of taking a beating this time, it actually came in. So, yeah, I stayed there for a while, for about 3 years. And then I had a bunch of friends at the time who were doing Taekwondo and they were going to these tournaments and they kind of convinced me to change schools. And so, you know, I was like, well, you know, I'm over here getting beat up by these older dudes and I don't know anybody really, right? And I got all my friends going to this Taekwondo school. And so, you know, I think I got up to green belt over at TKI and then I jumped ship and I went to Lee's Taekwondo. It used to be off of Audelia in Dallas. It was Chang Sik Lee was the instructor. And go up there with my friends and I started over from white belt. And it was a lot of fun, but it was interesting is like the first week I'm there, what do they want to do? They want to spar. I'm like, oh man, this is great, right? At least I'm not getting beat up by these older guys. I'm in a class with people my own age. Cause I'm 15, 16 at this time, probably 16. And I just remember that the first night we had sparring, the Texas karate came out of me. It's like, man, I put everybody away with a reverse punch because it was different, right? They were used to kind of like, you know, tournament sparring and points came mainly from kicks and they didn't have a single defense against getting punched. And now, you know, later on, what I adapt to the environment I'm in and a year later, I'm doing the same thing, but it was just kind of eye-opening looking back at it. But I was there for about 3 years, got up to my red belt and then, you know, decided at that time I was going to go off to college. And it was funny, I get to college and I'm thinking I'm going to have this pause. And probably halfway through my first semester, I'm walking down to the laundry room in the basement and I see this guy in a black gi with a black belt on and he's teaching these two guys under a stairwell. I was like, so I stick around because I'm curious. I'm like, what is this? Right? Turns out he's a Kenpo guy. And I, to this day, I can never remember his name. And I was like, well, this is kind of cool, right? You know, I kind of miss it. So I started going down there like once a week, I didn't have a uniform with me at the time, but anybody who wanted to come, man, he was more than happy, right? And I just remember having a lot of fun with him. No rank came out of it, but it was just to keep training and he would show us different things and that was fun. But probably about a year later, you know, life, things happen. I'm not in school anymore. I'm sitting at home you know, I ended up joining the military and I went into the Air Force and I did my 4 years, but it was interesting while I was in, you know, I'm a young guy and I was probably more concerned about just going out, having a good time when I wasn't on duty. But I remember about halfway through going to the rec center and I was like, all right, I got to find something else to occupy my time. And there were guys going in and out of there that were teaching classes. And it was dirt cheap. In fact, some of them didn't charge at all. They just wanted someone to work out with and teach, right? And so it was amazing, the guys that were coming in and out there. And some would be there for a little bit. Some were in and out, and they were gone in 6 months. But I remember the first guy I went in, he was doing Taekwondo. And I was like, all right, well, this is cool. So, you know, I would go in, train with them. I went twice a week. And not long afterwards, I saw a new guy come in, and he was kind of doing like what I think was Shotokan, but he was definitely doing Aikido, right? Mm-hmm. So he was doing a lot of Japanese arts. It turned out he was my first sergeant. So he had just gotten stationed there, and I didn't realize it. We got to talking one night after class, and he's like, yeah, I'm first sergeant over at 96 Medical. And I was like, holy crap. I said, that's where I am. So sure enough, I saw him probably a few weeks later in his office, and it was just kind of funny. I was like, you know, we're all kind of bred to hate our first sergeant. and he actually wasn't too bad of a guy, but I certainly learned I didn't want to be on his bad side. But I trained with him for as long as he was there. And that was probably only for about the last 8 or 9 months of my commitment. And after that, came back to Dallas, and man, I just had the bug. It's like, I just couldn't stop. I was always looking for a place. Visited Guy Metzger's Lion Den. I was like, holy crap. But after a while, I kind of ended up at this jiu-jitsu judo place that was run by a guy named Vince Tumura, right? He used to have this place off of Bachman Lake. And what I liked about it was I could go during my lunch break when I was working and have class. And all these judo guys would show up, and some jiu-jitsu guys. And I'll admit, for probably the first year, I was their throwing dummy. Right. So, you know, I'm learning, and they're eager to teach me and show me stuff, right? Which was great. But I was more like this newbie, and I felt like I was the fresh piece of meat. I got thrown all over the mat. But you know, one thing it certainly did teach me was my fault. And they were great about instructing me and kind of using me as a guinea pig. And then I kind of morphed into, all right, you know, the day classes are great, but you know, I wouldn't mind some more hands-on. And so I started migrating to their evening classes. And they used to have a few guys that taught Tamura's family style of jiu-jitsu. I think it was called Hekeru. And that was a blast. I mean, they would show all these things coming off of a punch, how to redirect force, how to use someone's energy, always into a throw to a takedown to some lockup, right? And so, you know, I had some striking skills from karate, some skills from Taekwondo, and now getting into judo and jiu-jitsu stuff, and I was having a blast with it. Unfortunately, the judo school after Tamura passed away kind of transitioned a little bit. And I found myself looking for another place. I ended up over at this Kempo place, just on the other side of Bachman Lake, right? And I went in there and I saw the guys, and turned out it was the guy who ended up being a chiropractor for me a few weeks earlier, who gave me an adjustment, and he had a Kempo school. So I went in there, and the other great thing was I worked at Southwest Airlines, man, and this place was literally a 5-minute walk from where I was. Very nice. Right? So, yeah, so it was 4 days a week. I'm walking there during lunch, right? And they didn't have classes 4 days a week. They had two classes a week during the day, but I had the good fortune of meeting this guy who kind of had his own business by the name of Mike Mosby, and he was a student there as well. So we would come on our off days and train together, and they would let us in, right? But I was there for about almost 5 years, I want to say, and again, starting over from white belt, right? And what I liked about it is they had a lot of other things going on there. They had some Aikijitsu stuff. They had Aikido stuff. They, in the end, Tamura Judo migrated over there, as well as some of the Hekeru stuff from Tamura as well. He had a few black belts that actually were teaching there. And I stayed. I was having a great time. We would do striking and into throws and some other stuff. And I was like, man, this is great, right? And then about 4 years in, I get my brown belt, and I'm thinking to myself, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm committing to my black belt this time. I'm not going to up and leave, right? And lo and behold, this guy shows up, and it's a Kagekembo guy. Right, Bert Vickers, and he's still my instructor to this day. Right, and he came in, and we were all like, "What's Kagekembo?" Right, I never heard of it. And so he gets up there, and he got invited to do a demo, and he's telling us all about it. And I'm thinking to myself, "Man, this sounds pretty cool, right? It's got all this kind of mysticism coming out of Hawaii. These guys created it, right? They were street fighters trying to create a comprehensive art." And I was like, man, this is cool. And so he asked for a volunteer because he wanted to demonstrate. And I remember one of the black belts got up there. He's like, just punch in. I don't care what you do, right? So he throws a punch, and all of a sudden all you hear is just a kick to the groin, a shot to the face, a hit to the body. He's down on the ground. He's stomping on it. And I was like, holy shit, I'm sorry about
Oh no, that's like
that. Okay, I was like, that is the coolest stuff I've ever seen, right? This guy just tore him up. And, at that time, I'm used to, for good or bad, we didn't make much contact there, right? There was more emphasis on just going through the technique. And, I'm not going to say we danced around each other, but we sort of did, right? And here I see someone who put it into practical application. I mean, he just tore this guy up. And a guy gets up and he's like, all right, do something again. And you could see the reluctance on his face. He's like, oh, hell no. It's like, you want me to punch in again? You want me to do something? And so he does it again, and Bert just lays into him. And I was like, oh my God, man, this is Kagekembo, And so I had the good fortune that afterwards, Bert stayed around for a little while, right? And I mean, any and every class that he was teaching, I made sure I was there. I was like, I gotta be there, right? This guy's just awesome, right? Well, I did that for a while, and next thing you know, Bert leaves, right? And I'm like, holy crap, what am I gonna do now, right? It's like that's what I wanted, right? I mean, he brought the complete what I'm thinking at the time is a complete art. And I still believe that today with Kagekembo, right? It's like you've got the striking, you've got the takedowns, you've got the joint locks, right? You've got the kicks and just how they blend it all and make it to where you can transition from striking to a lock to a throwdown. I'm not going to say fluidly, but more fluid than what I've seen others do, right? And how it just all kind of blends together. And I was like, that's the guy I want to be with. And so the promise I made to myself of you're going to stick it out here till you get your black belt went right out the window. It was like, it's March, and I'm like, crap, man, I'm supposed to test in October for my black belt. And here again, I'm like, what am I going to do? So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to jump, right? So I contacted Bert, and he's like, yeah, I'll take you on. And I was like, man, that's awesome. So I started training under Bert. I mean, he provided me a ton of guidance. Anytime I needed something, he was there. He kind of showed me the true essence of Kagekembo, introduced me to a lot of people, Tommy Burks being one. I think you had a show with him earlier. David Jenkins, I don't know if you've ever met him. The guy's phenomenal. Kempo guy, he's under Tommy as well. But I started getting into this, more body contact, more body conditioning, see how people actually react when they take a punch and how that flows into, a takedown or a lock or, God forbid I'm on the ground. I've got a basic, enough basics to know how to get up, right? It's certainly not my world, and kudos to those that do it, right? I mean, it's a whole other game. But, I was like, wow. So in the meantime, I start training with Bert, and I'm learning Kagekembo. And luckily, a good friend of mine, Chris Kimbrough, who used to be a black belt, under the Kenpo school. He's like, you know what? I'm going to take you under and I'm going to get you your black belt in Kenpo. I'll continue your training so that, you know, those 5 years, you don't feel like they're a waste. And you know, it's not like I felt they were a waste. I was still learning, right? I was still putting stuff into my vocabulary, so to speak, right? Getting tools. But he was nice enough to continue the training of the Kenpo I was doing while I was still under Bert. And, you know, later on, I kind of find out the Kenpo I was doing because this individual created his own style of Kenpo, right? But it really was kind of a blend of Valari and Nick Serio Kenpo.
Oh, gotcha.
As I started to get more introduction into the Kenpo world and the guys on the East Coast, I was like, holy crap, man, we call that something different, but that's the same technique, right? Mm-hmm. So it was interesting to see that. And it makes sense. He was from the East Coast. So, you know, I figure that was probably part of his lineage or where he got the influence. But really been under Bird ever since. And what I love about it is not just, you know, him bringing me along and being my instructor and giving me guidance, but the artist self, you know, the striking that comes with it, it being Kenpo based, you know, the ability to put the joint locks in it, which I'm a huge fan of, and then the throws, which I love, especially from my days of getting tossed around. Now I feel like, great, now I get to toss people around. This is fantastic, right? Mm-hmm. So it's been quite a journey. I've been with Bert now for, gosh, 20 years. So, you know, I finally made that commitment and got the black belt. And there's a few stripes on there now, but you know, I'll continue that. I don't see myself going anywhere, but I certainly see myself, you know, gaining knowledge from others that I've met along the way. I think I told you I'll be heading over to Tommy's this coming weekend on the 17th. You know, he's been a huge influence when it comes to striking. I watch him and his guys. You know, I do go to one of the Kenpo schools in Louisville every now and then too. A guy named Steve Tapper, who's just an amazing student of Brian Hawkins. And man, when he shows me Kenpo and, you know, just the footwork and how to use body, it's amazing what they can do. And I, you know, I do my best to bring that back to my students. But I look at it as, you know, the journey's certainly not over. I'm continuing it just under the Kaji Kenpo branch and just trying to be better than what I was yesterday and trying to pass down that to my students.
Yeah, very, very, very nice. Just to kind of jump on a few things that you mentioned. One, definitely giving a shout out to Tommy Burks and Steve Tapper. Had the pleasure of training with both of them and excellent groups that they have there, and always look forward to getting to work with them when I can find the time to do that. I like that. I say that how the martial arts found you, and from your story, you know, the Kaji Kenpo definitely found you in that. It's interesting to me to see how you had these seeds of, you know, being at the Texas Karate Institute and doing the judo and jiu-jitsu stuff and doing some Kenpo, and it was like all those kind of little seeds were planted, and then when Kaji Kenpo finally came calling, you already had kind of those little pieces already kind of ready to go. So I like that. That's yeah. You know, how those things work out in that fashion.
It is. You know, I thought I found home until I found home. That's right. So, you know, it's just there are certain people in this lifetime that have an impact. And you know, and I'm not trying to butter up my instructor, but I always tell him, you know, how grateful I am. But the guy is truly amazing at what he does. And so if he can pass on that just a little bit, I'm going to grab onto it. And, you know, it's it's kind of like you said, all those seeds were planted, and when I saw it in full bloom, I was like, man, that is it, right? That's it for me. And I'm happy I made that decision. You know, it was starting over quite a bit, but here I am, and no plans to leave. I think at this point, it's like I'm not looking to, per se, empty my glass. As a lot of people say, I'm actually looking just to get a bigger glass, right? Let's keep what I have and let's just keep adding to it. I don't want to pour anything out, but I'm certainly going to keep adding to it. So,
very nice, very nice. Now, just to make sure that I'm clear, so as far as in the Kenpo school, did you ever get your black belt there?
I did, but it wasn't from... So it ended up being from one of his students, right? So it turns out that Nick Chamberlain is who it was down at Bachman Lake. He had a few high-ranking students. Roland Neary was one. Chris Kimbrough was the second highest. When I left and Chris left, Chris probably left about a month before me, and then I left right after him. And both of us to go under Bert.
Right.
Chris was like, well, I'm just going to continue your training, right? And at the time, Chris, I think, was a fourth degree. So he brought me along to my first, and then about 2 years later, allowed me to test for second, right? In the meantime, I'm still getting knowledge and rank under Mr. Vickers, so.
Gotcha. Now, have you trained in any other arts since getting the Kajikembo bug, or
you know what, I'm not gonna say I've trained in any other arts, right? I'm sticking to my Kajikembo roots, but the way I look at it is, you know, Kajikembo having Korean karate, mainly Tang Sudo, having the judo, the jujitsu from Danzon Ryu, having the Kenpo base. Now, not Ed Parker Kenpo, but, you know, the lineage that comes under William K. Chow from Hawaii. And then having the Chinese boxing in it and American boxing, I'm like, you know, I feel like I'm already spread pretty thin. So I'm trying to not look for another art. I'm looking to get better in those individual arts that already contribute to the one I'm in. And that's what really kind of led me to Steve Tapper and Tommy. I was like, man, for the striking arts of Kenpo, I'm super impressed. I mean, the footwork, the fluidity, how to use proper body mechanics. I mean, I don't know that there's another art that does that. And the science and vocabulary behind it is impressive, right? So I'm probably been working most on that aspect of Kajikembo. I feel like I already had a pretty good background in jiu-jitsu and judo. And then in Taekwondo, let's face it, I'm good in my kicks. I'm best below the waist. So, and you know, it's not that I couldn't kick higher. I mean, to my own fault, I don't stretch enough, and that's something I need to work on as a student of the art, you know. Not to say I can't, but you know, we kind of have this adage of, if I want to kick you in the face, I'm either going to throw you on the ground or bend you over. So,
exactly.
Is that so? So, I mean, if it comes to a groin kick or a knee stomp, man, I'm your guy.
Right? Yeah, re-stomp that groin. That's the mantra. Yeah, I like it. That's definitely something I've always been interested about in Kajikembo is that. Yeah, it is in this world of so many people are cross training and doing, you know, different arts that, you know, a lot of that is already baked in, built in. So that's, you know, you just kind of, like you said, you don't really need to cross train because yeah. you're already doing it. So I like that.
Now, and that's not to say that there are guys out there I couldn't benefit from, right? I'm sure there are. It's just that for myself right now, I'm not looking to take up a new art, even though there are some that I have to admit are very intriguing. When I watch the Filipino arts and I I see the stick fighting and the knife fighting and some of the interesting combinations that they have in Salat. And I'm like, wow, that'd be cool to add to my repertoire. But I'm sort of just kind of staying in my lane right now and just trying to get better at the individual arts that already make up my system.
Gotcha. Now, so I'm not super familiar with kind of all the ins and outs of Kajukenbo, but so I assume that they have forms and weapons and whatnot, or I guess
We do.
to kind of in contrast to Kenpo, I don't know if maybe can kind of talk to how Kajukenbo is different than Kenpo, at least in your experience.
Yeah, so we do have forms, and so, and I don't, well, you already stated you didn't know too much about the system, but there are different flavors of Kajikenbo. Maybe like there's different flavors of Kenpo, Ed Parker versus, the Tracys, or in this case maybe Serio Valari, some of the others. But Kenpo has, or Kajikenbo has, a few branches. And so there's the original hard style. There's Aldo Costco's came in, has Wun Hop Kune Do, and gosh, I'm gonna Ceiling Pie, and then there's another one too. But really, under the original style, going down the lineage from Sergio Adriano Imperato to Aleo Reyes, Aleo Reyes is one of his black belts was a guy by the name of Peralta, Richard Peralta, who's was in Fort Worth, and he started his own kind of flavor branch of Kajikenbo. And that's the lineage I come from. And Bert, my instructor, was a direct descendant from Richard Peralta. And so when I look back over the forms that were created from the original hard style and then the forms that were created in the other branches, there are some variations, right? But we do have forms. It may not look exactly like the original hard style because everybody kind of puts their little kind of spit twist on it and their spin based, based on their own experiences or things that they've learned. So while you may do Palama one in one school, it's going to look different than in another, right? The same even with our trick arts or our grab arts. Trick one in my school, I've been to other hard style schools, and I'm like, wow, that looks different than my trick one, right? Or when I get up to the later tricks, I mean, they look different. You know enough about your art to understand, oh, that's number seven, but man, they do it differently, right? But the core concept of, beating the heck out of each other in class is still there, right? The body conditioning, because air karate isn't going to show you what you can do, and it's not going to show you how to react when someone, you deliver a punch and they don't move the way you're choreographed, right? Because, a technique's never going to work like designed. I mean, you're going to punch someone, they're going to move differently, but you need to have enough knowledge on how do you follow up and how do you keep it fluid and how do you keep the attack going, right? So I appreciate that part of it. But yeah, there is certainly forms in Kenpo or Kajikenbo. We have 14 different forms that we do. And every now and then I'll show one of the forms I learned that come out of the serial system. I would love to learn some of the short forms and long forms that come from Ed Parker Kenpo. And maybe one day I'll do that. But weapons, yeah, we teach against clubs and knives, and I think that's probably the same with most self-defense arts. I think we're giving our own little twist on experiences as we learn more with knives, especially, right? I'll be honest with you, it's to me, knives is probably a lot more theory than application versus, everybody's been punched at. So, there's theory probably makes a little bit more sense, but I've never had a knife pulled on me or someone use a knife on me. So, I'm going that off what I'm teaching is actually applicable, and I question some of it, and it makes me kind of think, all right, what do I think works is versus what's being passed down a theory has never been tested out, right? I mean, No one's looking to go out to a bar and ask someone to stab them so they can prove that their knife one works. Exact
Exactly.
stuff. So, yeah, so we do have a lot of weapons work, right? And we try to, I think we try to improvise and make it to what we think is applicable, right? Not just go with, how should I say, kind of what was taught before, tradition. Just in an ever-evolving world, we kind of just want to evolve with the threat. And so when I watch some of the club and knife techniques, I'll be honest with you, some of it makes me cringe. But it's ever-evolving, so I rely a lot of what our tricks and grabs show us and try to kind of adapt that for what I think a threat would be with a knife or a club. But yeah.
Very nice. Yeah, there's definitely getting, in these combat arts, we really have to get that body time, and doing the quote unquote air karate will only get you so far. So we have to train as realistically as we can. I mean, obviously, guns and knives and certain attacks and things like that, you can only do so much, but the closer that we can get to kind of the real reactions, the real putting our hands and feet and all other parts on each other to really kind of test things out. That's important. And Kempo, these arts really excel at that move, as being closer, not throwing any kind of shade to Taekwondo or other arts, but a lot of schools do a little less of the actual quote unquote battle testing, and do more of the kind of theory. Yeah, being as close as you can to the real thing is very important.
And it's funny that you say that, not to digress too much, but it's I remember when I left Texas Karate Institute, and I went to the Taekwondo school with my friends. It was interesting that man, we did a lot of fighting there. I mean, every night was fighting, right? And it wasn't just hands, it was feet flying, hands flying. If you did a takedown, kick them in the groin, freaking great, right? And you did everything to protect your face because at the time that you'd get punched in the face. And I just remember going to the Taekwondo school and just being completely entrenched in this new way of thinking, right? And they did a lot of Olympic style, tournament style fighting. So I was amazed that one of the second nights I was there, they were like, "All right, we're sparring tonight." All right. And so I get in there and I kid you not, I fought three times and ended three times the fight with a reverse punch. Because it was interesting to see that they were fighting towards kind of these tournament rules and everybody's hands were just dangling at their side. But I mean, don't get me wrong, if I got hit with one of those kicks, I was probably gonna crumple over, right? But I just remember it's like as soon as they posted and I saw they were straight on, it was like, bam, reverse punch. And it was funny how three times in a row it ended like that, right? And I was like, man, this is, if it weren't for my friends, I might have stayed in Texas Karate, but I came over, but it was certainly interesting to see kind of where some schools come in and where others leave off, and then as things evolve and coming full circle to Kaji Kembo and now seeing in Kaji Kembo how we try to adapt what we think is a full game of ground and throwing and locks and kicking and punching, and now I'm like, okay, how can I guess fill the hole in my curriculum when it comes to knives, right? And so that's the one thing that I'm still searching for these days. And And, you know, being in contact with Mr. Burks, he certainly kind of created his own knife curriculum. That's very interesting to me. So I'm hoping to gain a little bit more insight into what he has to kind of bridge that gap.
I'd like to get more into knife work and weapon work and trying to see where I can fit those into my already overloaded schedule. But it's just there's so much to learn, and it's so much fun, and it's so exciting that it's hard to, you know, like the potato chips, can't eat just one. Like,
Oh yeah.
can't train in just one thing, but
Well, and I don't think anybody understands that more than a martial artist, right? It's like
for sure.
it's almost like it, I mean, in a way it is a lifestyle, right? You made this commitment and I'm gonna tell you in the 30 years I've been doing it, it's been a blast, and I hope not to stop anytime soon.
Like it. I like it. So now I'm curious, is there any kind of like competitions within within the Kajikembo world, or?
Yeah, so you know, it's I see a lot of it school by school. So, you know, there's this mindset of, oh, you can't do that in a tournament, right? And if you practice for a tournament, you're kind of watering down, you know, some of your other self-defense skills. Like, you know, they're not going to let you kick someone in the balls, right? And take them down and grab them by the throat, whatever it might be. But you know, I think from a realistic standpoint, though, that sparring kind of gives you immediate feedback, right? It's like, all right, it teaches you how to move, how to evade, how to block, how to counter, you know. So while there aren't necessarily Kajikembo tournaments, and I would say especially in Texas, right, it's Kajikembos are very big art out on the West Coast in California, and yeah, there they do have Kajikembo tournaments, but they kind of follow the same Kempo and karate tournament rules, right? So around here, not too many Kajikembo tournaments, if at all. Typically, if a Kajikembo school goes to a tournament, it's usually under the other art rules. So we're usually more of a participant than we are hosting or sanctioning any type of tournament, especially in Texas. It's much bigger out on the West Coast.
Okay, gotcha. Right. So let's move over to the teaching side of it. When did you get involved in that part of it, and was that something that you were kind of always interested in, or
I'll be honest, it really wasn't. So I was happy just learning and just grinding it out, right? It probably wasn't until I met my current instructor, Bert Vickers. I was like, oh man, this guy is awesome. I mean, the first time I saw him move or do anything, it got me hooked, right? And then you know, when I got to my black belt, I was like, you know, I want to teach this. I mean, how many people have heard of Kajikembo? If I asked 10 people, maybe one, right? So I was really intrigued by it. I felt like it was something I'd been looking for, and I wanted to share it, right? And it's funny how it started. I was kind of going through my training with him, and I just got my black belt, and all of a sudden, one day at work, someone's like, you know, I want to take martial arts. I said, well, you know, if you want to, we can train together. So training together, and next thing you know, there's like three of us training together. Next thing you know, there's another one. And I never got a huge school. And even today, I don't have a huge school. And I would say for the most part, it's because people don't like to get kicked and punched. Right? So, I mean, you have to have a go into it with a certain mentality that when you go to a Kajikembo class, and I'm not speaking for every school, but certainly ours, you're gonna get kicked in the groin, you're gonna get punched, and you're gonna feel it, right? And that's the whole part is, you know, a little bit of body conditioning and learning how people react to contact to take advantage of it and manipulate kind of, you know, I destroy structure, and what do I do with it after that? But yeah.
Very nice, very nice. Now, so kind of where do you see the future of Kajakembo? Where would you like to see it head? Kind of.
Man, you know, I would love to see it get bigger and be spread more. It's obviously on the West Coast in California, Kajakembo's got a much bigger following just because of its proximity to all the guys coming out of Hawaii and spreading it, right? It's sort of trickled this way. A few schools over in, you know, in Nevada, Arizona. Obviously, there's some here in Texas as well. And we have a huge presence, believe it or not, in Europe, which is interesting, right? Especially in the country of Spain. But I would love to see it grow. My fear is, you know, I don't know that it will, because there's this huge emphasis on contact. You have to know how to be hit and how to take it and how to give it, you know? So it's experimentation through contact, right? You have to know, you can't just air karate someone in the groin and then mimic them bending over and, right? You don't want someone to kind of take on the role of reacting to a strike that never made contact. So we emphasize, you got to know what it's like, not just to take it and recover from it, but how to give it and react to someone's reaction, right? Kick them in the groin, they bend over. Oh man, this is great, right? I'm immediate follow-up. How to do something that someone doesn't react, right? So now I forgot where we were going with this. I'm just on a rant, but
no, it's fine. I do that. I do that sometimes too. No, it's just you know, the just kind of I usually ask about kind of the future of the art with the with the popularity of MMA and that sort of thing, where we're getting there seems to be a shift away from not really sure how I want to describe it, maybe just kind of the Mr. Miyagi, the actual kind of training of the arts versus kind of you know, no slight to WWE or things like that, but it seems that people are more focused on this, I don't know, this showbiz you know, kind of fame versus actually training a real art or whatnot. So just curious, cause kind of where you would like to see things go and yeah, that's the thing that you kind of mentioned.
So with Kajakembo?
Yeah.
I mean, look, I would love to know that one day we're a household word, right? So, because I know if I was to go out to the street today and ask 10 people if they knew what it was, probably 10 people would say no, right? Even within the martial arts community, not many people have heard of us, but I would love to certainly spread it, get it a little more popular, without it being watered down. That's my fear, right? Is I would love for the art to grow, but my fear is that it gets watered down, and I would hate it to see it kind of deviate from what it is, right? But yeah, I mean, I'm losing my train of thought here. So if I look at it today, I would love to kind of keep it where it's at and be able to grow. I don't know if I have the right formula for that, because I feel like if I want to bring more people in, a lot of times I would have to soften it. And if I soften it, I kind of deviate from, you know, its original intent. And its original intent was to be kind of fill the gaps in stand-up, fill the gaps in the ground game, fill the gaps in, you know, combat, so I have a more complete art. And a lot of times that means that, you know, during training, there's harder contact than what you want to deal with, but it's just part of the game. So I would love to see it expand, but I think a lot of times it's probably that's the one thing that might be keeping that right from happening.
Yeah, it's a fine line in today's world that you know, we've gotten this softening, I guess, for lack of a better term, and just the kind of training. You know, most people don't are, you know, scared to get hit and
yeah,
kind of put in that work. And I get it. I mean, I even though I train a lot of arts and, you know, I like to go to sparring and do all these different things. You know, I don't like to get hurt. I don't like to get put in an arm bar and things like that. But I understand that what I'm, you know, I'm not training to sit down and have tea and biscuits. I'm
correct.
And this is a combat, you know, a combat system. I hope that I never have to use it or have to, you know, be in a situation where I have to punch or kick somebody or choke somebody or something like that. But if that, you know, if that does come up, I want to be ready and I want to know how to at least be more prepared for that sort of thing. So it's kind of funny to see the dance now of martial arts instructors, and that it's like, okay, well, I want to get, you know, I want to get people in the doors, but at the same time, we can't have classes in, you know, and like we did in the blood and guts days. Yeah. Can't, we won't get any training. We'll just get lawsuits and that sort of thing these days. Yep. So yeah, it's a very delicate balancing act for that. So. But
it is, and you know, we like to think we're the toughest guys out there, and I'm sure there's tougher, but you know, we try to train with a certain mentality, and it's not for everybody, right? And I'm sure there are programs that I'd be like, wow, this isn't for me either. But you know, we try to, as much as we can, make sure that, you know, listen, if everybody or anybody ever punches in to me, then man, this is class, right? This, you know, go with it. You've trained it. It should be instinctual at this point, and you defend yourself, you know, and I've been lucky in that aspect. I've only used it once since I've been training, and it worked to my benefit. And I've had another student as well work to his benefit. And that's, you know, you hate to think you've been training 20, 30 years just to have someone punching on you one time, but you know what? How about having no training and you didn't know what to do? So, you know, there's a payoff and a reward, but it's at this point, it's more of a lifestyle, I think.
Gotcha. All right. So we're going to move into our lightning round here. I got a few little questions as we head towards wrapping up.
Sure.
First one being, do you have a favorite technique?
Oh, man. Yeah, so I do. So we have this thing we call rapid fires, right? And they're called different things in different schools, but it's basically kind of an addendum to the curriculum. So it's not like trick 1 through 21 or grab 1 through 19. It's kind of an off curriculum. Every school has their own 10 or 12 things they teach. And I do have a few. Not that it's going to make sense here, but I would say for me, it is Rapid Fire 7 from my curriculum, which is basically a duck under with a groin strike and then a strike to the back of the neck with a takedown to a crank, right? That's probably one of my more favorites. Probably doesn't make sense me saying it out loud. But
oh yeah, we can do our homework
and the other is really an entry to a drill that we have used constantly, that you know, whether it's a come out of the nowhere, you know, right hook that just takes forever to get there because people love these big haymakers, or if it's a straight punch or a jab, we do have what we call rapid fire drill. It's number 8 on our curriculum. And it really is just blasting an arm and coming straight in with a groin kick and a shot to the neck. So love those two. Probably one of the things we do the most, even when we have free spar nights and it's open, right? That seems to flow out of everybody the most. So good or bad, I think it's more than just my favorite.
Nice. Right. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
Wow. I can tell you my least favorite.
Well, that'll work. That'll work too. That'll work.
Probably my favorite form is, I hate to say this, it's not a Kaji Kempo form. It actually came from Nexerio Kempo. It's what they call Dance of the Tiger. It's probably my favorite form to do. But if I was to go back to Kaji Kempo, there is a form 8, and it's our kicking form. And man, that thing just takes every little bit out of you. It certainly tests your ability to kick and balance. So love those two. My other favorite one is form 9. So that's the Kaji Kempo curriculum.
That's an all the. Check those out and see what they're all about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can relate with the form. So I started in a Kempo school that essentially shared the curriculum of that of the Tracy school. And I love to do book set, or it's also known as Panther set in some schools. But I was saddened to learn that most American Kempo schools don't do that form, and that's like one of my favorite ones. So I still do it, and if I should one day have my own school, I'm going to teach it. So sorry, other Kempo folks that aren't fans, I like it, and
yeah,
we could debate about whether or not it's actually Kempo, but I like it, and I'm gonna do it, and.
My thing. Listen, if there's something you like or you see benefit from, I mean, there are things that I bring to my curriculum that may not be straight from the Kaji Kempo curriculum, but I feel like there's benefit to add it to the curriculum, at least let my students decide for themselves and give them the opportunity. So
nice for this. All right. Next question. Do you have a favorite weapon?
Oh, man. Ooh. Besides my hands and feet, I would say favorite neck weapon is probably a knife. Nice. For me, yeah, we train knives. The thing I like about a knife is that, first of all, I can carry it. So, second of all, is we use it enough that I feel comfortable with it, right? And I feel like it's just an extension of the hand. So, truly love. Love knives, love knife techniques.
Yeah, like I mentioned before, I'm looking to get back or get more into knife stuff. So need to work on that and get with some folks, some previous guests and stuff to get into some more knife stuff. But I like it. I like it. All right. Next question, if there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, who would that be?
Oh, man. you know what? If I could choose, I would probably go back to where Ed Parker and CJO Adriano Imperato came from, and that would be under, oh, my gosh, it's going to escape me now. Their instructor, Chow, and really, I would love to kind of see what they went through and where they got their inspiration from, and you know how they took that to, you know, into Kaji Kempo, how they took that into American Kempo. So, if I could go back and work out with Chow, that would be awesome.
Very nice. Yeah, I like that. I liked it.
And then I do have a guy, I obviously he's not around with us anymore, but there used to be a guy named Billy Doak. And I don't know if you've heard of him or not, but
sounds a little familiar.
Yeah, he was sort of my idol when it came into anything Aikijutsu or Jiu-Jitsu. So If I ever had the opportunity and Billy Duck was resurrected, yeah, you absolutely better believe I would love to have some tutelage under him. He was just amazing.
Very nice. I like it. I like it. All right. So now we're going to move into our shameless self-promotion. So you can
Oh.
plug anything you'd like or anything that you wanted to get out there that maybe we hadn't covered. And now's your chance. You have the floor, and we'll close out from there.
Hey, you know what? I'm going to be a little selfish. So, I'm going to plug Kaji Kembo. I mean, I would love to see the art grow. I mean, we have a pretty good presence here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. There's a few of us, myself, my brother in the art, and a little higher ranking than me, but Israel Gonzalez, who's over in Fort Worth, my instructor, Bert Bickers, who's down in Houston. I would love to see us grow. I would love to one day be able to kind of get in a position where we kind of have our own place, right? Today we're in a rec center, and hats off to the rec center for giving us a home. But I would love to build up my student base to one day move out and kind of have our own place. I want to certainly say thank you to Tommy Burks, who's been an inspiration. I want to say thanks to oh my gosh, names are getting away from me now. But Steve, who's over in Louisville, who we go train with every now and then, great Kempo guy. Give a shout out to them. But I think for right now, I would just love to give a shameless plug to us. If you're looking for something that I feel is more of a complete art that allows you to have stand up, ground game, throwing game, locking game, please come out and see us. So,
Very nice. Yeah, I'll make sure to get links and things like that for in the show notes. And yeah,
yeah.
definitely get some people out your way. Like I mentioned, I got so many things, but if you mentioned, I didn't realize that there's someone in Fort Worth. So I'm definitely gonna have to hit you up on that and try and see if I can get that squeezed in too. So.
Absolutely.
Very nice. All right. Well, I thank you so much for taking the time to be on and sharing your story. And I now have more more things to look into. So I'm excited about that. But yeah, once again, just thank you so much for being on. And I'm excited to get this out for others to hear.
Now, I appreciate you reaching out, and thank you very much. And look, if you ever want to stop by, you don't have to call, you don't have to ask, just show up, right? And hopefully, I see you next week. So,
Yeah,
if
I'm
not,
definitely going to try and make it out. As we're recording here, I'm going to be actually traveling for work next week, but I believe I'll be back in time for Tommy Burks is having a little Kempo camp seminar thing, so events. So hoping I can make it out to that. Went last year and had a good time with that. So. Would certainly like to do that again this year. So, fingers
absolutely.
crossed I can make it out there. But yeah, just looking forward to all the great training, and I will definitely come visit when I can.
Absolutely. Always welcome.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right, buddy. You have a great day and have a good weekend.
You too.
All right.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkempo.com. Thank you.